Let's continue talking about divorce. Again, not a very fun topic, but an important topic, especially for those impacted by it. Today is part two of my previous chat with Amy Colton, and this is the 55th episode of the Retirement Planning Education Podcast.
Welcome to the Retirement Planning Education Podcast, where you can learn all about IRAs and Roth IRAs, employer retirement plans, taxes, Social Security, Medicare, portfolio withdrawal strategies, annuities, estate planning, and much more. And now here's your host, Andy Panko.
OBKB, everyone, thank you again for listening. As always, welcome back. Today is part two of my previously recorded chat in one of my Facebook Live videos with Amy Colton from Your Divorce Made Simple down in Texas. Amy is a divorce-focused specialization financial planner working with clients going through divorce or contemplating divorce. She's an absolute expert in the sort of divorce subset specialization of financial planning. And she was kind enough to take some time and hang out with me virtually in my Facebook group in November 2021 to talk for about an hour and answer member questions live and on the spot about divorce and the various financial implications and planning things to consider around those going through divorce or contemplating divorce. It was super, super helpful. Not a lighthearted or exciting topic or, you know, uplifting topic, but definitely important. Obviously, for those experiencing divorce or considering divorce, there's a lot of things you should know, need to know, take into consideration so as to not shoot yourself in the foot or, you know, hurt yourself financially more so. I mean, divorce is devastating regardless, but hurt yourself financially more so than necessary. So people like Amy can really help you think through, talk through, and make the best decisions for you given the circumstances. Anyway, so moving on. Today is part two of my audio with Amy from November 2021. I hope you find it helpful. It's going to sound a little choppy because I just cut the audio in half from the original recording. So there's like an abrupt stop and start. So today we're just kind of picking right up with the audio where I cut it. So it's not a smooth lead in, but anyway, hopefully you don't care. The content is good and should speak for itself, I like to think. So without further ado, here's part two of my chat with Amy Colton from Your Divorce Made Simple.
Is there anything unique to age by any chance? Not just stage of life. Like obviously if kids are grown and independent, there's, you know, yet you don't have the child support issue thing, but just generally age, any divorce considerations or rules or laws around?
Not really age. No, it wouldn't be really age, but the important thing is to know that if you're married for 10 years, that you, and you don't remarry, you're entitled to half of your husband's Social Security or vice versa, whichever is more. So if his half of his is more than yours, you can get that, but you have to have been married for 10 years and you can't get remarried. So that may be an area where you don't want to get remarried for tax reasons or financial reasons anyway.
Right. Yeah. If that benefit is large enough. Sure.
And I once met a woman who'd been married for like 9 years and, you know, 11 months or something. And she was really very upset that she didn't know that rule.
Yeah, I heard anecdotally same thing. Someone didn't know it, and it was literally like off by a day. And I heard it on a podcast, I think. So I'll assume it's true. but the lawyer wasn't aware of this, and the lawyer allowed them to sign the divorce decree. It was like 9 years, 11 months, and 20-something days shy. So they missed it by a few days, and the lawyer didn't know. Let them sign the decree. Now, anyone who knew that would have said, "Hold off, you know, we're waiting 2 weeks to sign this thing."
Right.
And would have got, you know, a sizable amount of income from it in the terms of this Social Security benefit. What is the most effective way to protect premarital assets other than a prenuptial agreement? Is a prenuptial agreement even enforceable in all states?
That's another interesting question, because if you have a prenuptial, the reason I say this is one of my clients came to me she's not a divorce client. She's a financial planning client, but she had a daughter who's going to inherit substantial assets. And she asked me if her daughter needed a prenuptial agreement. And my answer was yes. Now she asked the same question to the CPA and the CPA said, no, you just need to document what the assets are. And so I went back to my client and I said, well, that's probably true if your daughter is living in Texas, but your daughter lives in California now. And who knows where she's going to be living if she ever gets divorced, where that's going to be. So the answer really is a prenuptial agreement is a great thing to have. And most states, you will be entitled to keep your premarital assets. But I would always recommend that you talk to an attorney. You can't guarantee it if you do a prenuptial in New Jersey and you end up getting divorced in Texas that it will hold. But I think your chances are much greater. And I can't think of any situation in any state where they don't let premarital assets remain with the person, prior to marriage. So I think it's a good idea. But I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to be able to give you advice, legal advice. Sure.
Now, is there any rules of thumb? So prenuptial agreements could be prickly things, right? I think we all know what they do. They sort of say, if we're getting married, these are my assets. If and when we get divorced, then these stay my assets. That's kind of the gist of it, right?
Right.
Rules of thumb when someone should or may want to consider it. I mean, I assume if you have a lot of assets, your spouse doesn't. Maybe if you're getting married later in life, more so. But what again? Not advice, but what do you tell or coach people about this?
I mean, I think it's prudent to get it, especially if you've got more significant amount of assets, or you are getting married later in life and everybody's kind of established their own, because you don't know if you're going to be married for a year or you 50 years. Right. You really don't. So I think it's a prudent thing to get. And you also, and the other thing that a lot of people don't realize is you can also do what's called a postnuptial agreement. So you can have like the same kind of agreement after you're married, to talk about when things are not shaky. But the important thing, and I think even more important than having a prenuptial agreement, is if you have premarital assets, that you do not commingle them during the marriage, because then it gets harder to keep them premarital.
And by commingle, and this was, someone posted this, do not commingle assets, keep in your own name and keep all proof and chain of custody. So commingling, is that just simply, prior to me getting married, I have an individual brokerage account in my name. I get married. Commingling means if I were to take these assets, transfer them into a joint account that I have with my spouse.
Yeah.
So do not do that. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you can, and I know we've done this, when we did the division of assets, there were like two retirement accounts. He had one, she had one, and they had them before they got married. They were both able to go back and say, hey, I had X amount in my account when I got married. That is not going to be divided between the couple.
Okay.
But if you know what that is, I mean, I think the smart thing to do is just to keep it separate. But in most cases, if you know what the value was, you don't really commingle retirement accounts because they're
right individual
in the individual's names.
Yeah.
But where it gets tricky is, say, you had a house that you bought before you got married, and now that's going to be your marital home, and you both contributed to the mortgage. Now you've contributed to the house is appreciated. That's the kind of thing that probably should be talked about or in a prenuptial agreement or a postnuptial agreement.
Okay. So this person was thinking the same thing, but with stocks. So will the post-marriage growth in a premarital stock portfolio be considered joint or individual? So I guess to your point, I mean, maybe slightly different because the people don't really use a stock portfolio, but I have an individual brokerage account with stocks in it. It's valued at $1 million the day I get married. During my marriage, it goes up to $2 million. Is that growth in any way considered now a commingled marital asset, or is that still all mine?
It's still, as long as you didn't commingle it, as long as you kept it separate, it is not.
Okay. But now the house, I bought a house all on my own before getting married. I get married, my spouse moves into the house with me, starts, you know, jointly paying for some of the bills and the upkeep and whatever. Let's assume the house is fully paid for, so there's no mortgage. How does that get treated now? It's still titled in my name, but we're both kind of splitting the costs of it as a married unit.
Again, yeah. I would have a prenup.
Okay.
I really talk clear. About it because yeah. it's, you know, you still have the appreciation.
Right.
How's that split up? You have, even though there's no mortgage, but you're still commingling, you know, expenses around the house. It gets sticky once you commingle something. If you keep it separate, like the stock example, you keep it separate, right. It's in your name. Retirement account, you keep it separate, it's in your name. It's easier. But when you start commingling, and the same thing is true with inheritances. You know, you inherit something while you're married. As long as you don't commingle it and you keep it separate, it's yours.
Yeah.
In most states would allow that.
Now, what would happen hypothetically? So let's assume I have a really large 401k or IRA. Point is, it's mine individually in my name. Get married. For whatever reason, from the time I'm married going forward, my spouse and I don't create a lot of wealth, don't have a lot of income, whatever. Yet we're getting by in life for a handful of years. We divorce. My 401k is still the lion's share of our household assets, and that's all still mine. So upon the divorce, is my spouse not entitled to any of that 401k?
So what I've seen is that they know what that 401k was worth premarital.
Okay.
And they put that stake in the ground, and then whatever. It's hard. Whatever it's worth now. Say it was worth $100,000 when you got married, and now it's worth $1 million. Chances are you're going to have to split the $900,000.
Okay. And is this, and
even though it's hard to say how much of that $100,000 grew,
right?
You
know, right.
Because you keep contributing more over the years, and that what your contributions are really marital assets.
Got it. So the contributions and growth thereon fundamentally are marital. Okay. Wow. Yeah. I can see how this gets complicated.
Yeah.
Okay. And just stepping back. So what's a postnuptial agreement? I've heard the term, but realized what is it?
Prenuptial agreement, except that you do the document after you're married. So it's taking it. It's because this happened to me personally. I almost didn't get married because I was fighting with my husband to be about the prenuptial. So say you can't come to agreement and you get married because there's not enough time or whatever. And now you sit down, you have time, you're calm. I don't know. Maybe you're a year into the marriage and you say to your husband, you know, we never did the prenup. I think we should do it now while we're still friendly and while we can talk about it and then we're not under pressure and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Okay. But it is essentially what you would do in a prenup. It's just that you do it after you're married.
Oh, okay. So not after the marriage is over.
Got it. It's saying, how are we going to divide our assets if we ever get divorced? And you do it while you're married. Not necessarily when you're contemplating divorce.
Sure. That makes sense. That's why I was lost. I was like, what's the point in putting the agreement in place after the fact? Because you're already at ends with each other. But
yeah.
Okay. No. Got it.
It's just important for people to know it's an option. That's all.
Right. It doesn't have to be before you actually start.
Right. Like say you got married and now you think, you know, I should have had a prenup and I didn't. You can go do that.
Yeah. Okay. General question from Mr. David Foltz. What situations do you find most challenging when helping people through the divorce? I'm sure they're all challenging, but what's the most challenging?
I'll tell you. Let's talk about what's not the most challenging. Okay. So, and that'll give you context on what is the most challenging. So if I can get the couple to sit down and talk about what they both want, that is the ideal situation, because you don't need attorneys to do that. Mm-hmm. It is a more, you know, you can get that done quicker. You can do it more without spending so much money, because you're not involving the attorneys, and you can do it more amicably. Now, the most challenging situation I ever had, and I either get hired by the couple or I get hired by the woman. But this particular situation, I got hired by the guy. And the guy told me, it's going to be really easy. It's not going to take very much time. Yada, yada, yada. It was the worst situation I've ever had, because the wife did not want to get divorced. Mm. He was willing to give her anything to get out of the divorce. She was getting a great deal. But because she was so emotional and couldn't look at it realistic, it was really, really hard to go through the process with her. So that's the most difficult, if you have somebody it is an emotional time. Yeah. Both parties are emotional. But if you've got somebody that's so emotional, they can't even talk to you, they can't even think reasonably, that's where it gets really difficult.
Now, as part of the mediation process, do you put on your psychiatrist hat? Like, do you have the chops to help talk them through that and not say, like, you know, don't reprimand them, like, hey, you're being dumb, this is a great deal, but do you sort of try to get the point across, like, I know this is difficult, etc., but this is a, you know, great offer,
as much as you can. In that particular situation, it was almost impossible. This woman was getting a really good deal, and she goes, I just want to go to court. And that happens a lot, where people go, I just want to go to court. Well, they really don't want to go to court. They want to be heard, but they don't want to go to court, because court is the most expensive route to go. Yeah. It is the most expensive route. I think it's really important to understand all your options, all the different options that are out there when going through divorce. You know, to understand that mediation is an option, and you don't need an attorney to go to mediation. Even if they didn't go to me, if they just went through another mediator, they don't need an attorney to do that.
Okay.
So
that's the same in every state, that's the case? Are there any states that require a lawyer?
I'm pretty sure that is true in every state.
Okay.
Now, in Texas, you can't go to court, and this might be unique to Texas, you can't go to court unless you've tried to mediate. In other words,
really?
A judge will not hear you unless you've at least tried to mediate. I don't think that's true in New Jersey. But the interesting thing, because I was doing a little research on New Jersey law, that's really interesting to me, is that they try in New Jersey to get it done in a year, no longer than a year. I've had cases I've worked on that have lasted 2 years. And
why do they try, just for like all parties' sake, to not have it drag on? Or is there some other reason, do you think, that they try to?
They can't come to agreement. The couples can't come to an agreement.
What's New Jersey's, as an institution, what's New Jersey's reason for wanting to speed it up and not drag it out? You know, like, why try?
If these people have already decided that they don't want to be a couple anymore, let's get it over with. Let them get on with their life, which is actually a good thing, I think, you know?
Yeah. Seems pragmatic. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very pragmatic. So, I know that Texas doesn't have that, at least, goal.
Okay. Now, with people, even if they're amicable, they think they know what they want before they even come to a mediator, whether it's 50-50 or 70-30 or whatever, let's assume they propose to you, here's exactly what we want, we're both in agreement. If you think it's not fair, or if there's other angles you think they're not aware of, do you bring that up? Like, for example, from what I understand, it's common that people will walk away house rich, cash poor. You know, the house may be worth $1 million. So they may say, okay, I get the house, it's worth $1 million. You get the investments account, accounts, they're worth $1 million. We're good. Do you step in and be like, well, yeah, this house has a lot of expenses with it. Maybe you're not so good after all. Like what's your involvement with that?
I try to get people to be reasonable. First of all, if you're going to take the house, can you get a mortgage? Are you going to be able to qualify on your own? I mean, that's usually the biggest thing.
Okay.
Like, can you qualify for that mortgage on your own without it, say that there's two incomes? Or even recently I had a situation where the husband wanted to stay in the house and I wasn't sure that he could. I was working this in this particular case. I was the wife had hired me and she had an attorney, and I wasn't sure that he could afford the mortgage, because in Texas, homes have appreciated, especially this year, like out of sight. I mean, out of sight. The home was worth $1 million more than, like, I think they bought it for like 600 and now it's worth like 1.6.
In the Austin area?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. We went through a period this year where people would put their house on the market and they get 30 offers.
Yeah.
And they'd get offers that were 100,000 over asking. Or all cash offers. And anyway, I wasn't sure he could qualify. That's the other thing. You've got to be reasonable. If the person wants the house and they can qualify and the other party's okay with taking other assets, that's fine.
Yeah. So you're that voice of reason when they come to you with their proposal. Okay. Got it.
Good. I mean, a mediator technically is supposed to be neutral, and but I will tell you, because I've worked with a lot of different mediators, the mediators will also try to get them to agreement. And so sometimes they'll say, and mediators, most of the mediators in this town are ex-attorneys. So they have a hard time kind of taking off their attorney hat when they're doing it. But technically you're supposed to be neutral. And for the most part, you can be, but that doesn't mean you can't say, hey, did you think about this? Or did you think about this? If you do, X is going to happen or something like that.
Yeah. Right. I guess that attorney hat makes them want to always feel like they have to fight for something or someone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going back briefly to the thing again about the qualified in retirement account. So is it a good idea to create a new 401k or IRA? 401k may not be able to, but IRA after marriage, so that it's clear that the contributions to these accounts are marital money from that point forward.
Well, like you say, if it's a 401k and you're not going to be able to.
Yeah.
But in most situations, unless your employer allows you to do that, most situations you're going to have to keep the 401k the way it is.
I mean, IRA, I guess you can. It may be a little suspect if your spouse catches on, like, hey, you already have an IRA. Why are you starting a new one?
I don't think you need to do that. I think you just need to know what the value was when you got married.
Okay. Yeah. So snapshot of your statements or something.
Yeah. Or just, make sure you keep the statement.
Right.
When you got married.
Yeah. Okay. We're getting near top of the hour here. Any other comments, questions, parting words of wisdom before we wrap and tell people how to find you if they're interested in more? Something to look out for. I know divorce is weird, right? You don't want to tell people who are happily married to be like, yeah, you should start planning and thinking about these things. That's why I was kind of hesitant to ask you before our call, like, at what point should someone start considering divorce planning? I guess for most people, you shouldn't enter marriage thinking it ultimately end. But to your point, if you have a lot of assets or a later stage of life, it's probably not a bad idea to have that discussion with a, you know, by way of a prenup or postnup. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't know. I'm not sure where I'm going with that, but okay. Well, great discussion. Thank you. So for people who are interested, they can reach you at, give me a second here. Your Divorce Made Simple. Great name, by the way. Perfect titling. And just to recap, so you're based in Austin, Texas. You do your combination financial planner / mediator. And you said it's a flat fee. Is it the same package for everyone, or does it depend on their needs, where they're at in their divorce, how complex their life is, et cetera?
Well, there's three different packages, and they're based on how quickly, like my first package is a 6-month package.
Okay.
And then there's a package for a year, and there's a package for as long as it takes. So,
okay.
And then there is, you know, there's also like what happens if you buy the 6-month package and you go longer than 6 months. So there, you know, there's always add-ons, and there's add-ons, you know, there's add-ons too. Because if, say, for example, if there's a business evaluation that needs to be done, that's an additional fee. If I have to go to court as an expert witness, that's an additional fee. So the basic package is like a 6-month package, which includes the financial planning and the mediation as many times as you need.
Okay. So I don't know if it's on your website. I didn't look, honestly, but are you comfortable saying, you know, what your rate is?
Okay. So the rate for my 6-month fee is $5,000.
Okay. And to the extent that it extends beyond that, you can sort of tack on extra after that.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Don't know who this is, but thank you. Widow and single, and still thought it was very interesting tonight. So well,
thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And even for myself, I'm aware of some of the general things here, but I know it's an area of specialty that takes a different muscle and different set of expertise. So I'm glad, you know, for you being willing and able to come on and share your time and knowledge and enlighten us all a little bit. Hopefully a lot of us don't have to cross this bridge ever, but if and when we do, it's great to know there's people like you who can help simplify, really focus on what matters with the assets, save money, save time, save hassle by hopefully avoiding or minimizing lawyer usage. So thank you. All right. Cool. Well, thank you again, Amy Colton. Everyone, it was a pleasure. And just stick around after I kill the live. We'll just circle up afterward briefly. All right. Thank you all. Take care.
And scene. That's a wrap for my 2-part series with Amy Colton from Your Divorce Made Simple about financial planning and divorce. Hope you found that informative, helpful. If it does apply to you in your life at some point, meaning divorce, hopefully you will have found this information here beneficial to you and your transition through the divorce process. This is also the last edition of this podcast for 2022. Not that it really matters. I mean, these things live out there forever. You can listen to it whenever you want, but nonetheless, it's the last episode released for 2022. Be sure to come back in 2023. I'm going to kick off the new year with a multi-part series about the basics of investing. It's going to be a ground-up 101 intro to all things investing. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be phenomenal. I haven't yet started planning it out, so I don't know what it's going to look like or sound like, I should say, but I know it's going to be good, and I'm confident you all will get a lot out of it, especially those who are looking specifically for that, you know, the basics, the intro of investing. It's going to be one of the, it's going to go down the annals of history as one of the best speeches, audio content ever delivered. It'll be up there with Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech and Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. Am I hyping it up too much? I don't know. Maybe not. There's only one way to find out. Come back January and listen to it. Decide for yourself. Anyway, if you do like this podcast, you will like my other content stuff. My Facebook group is Taxes and Retirement. YouTube channel is Retirement Planning Demystified. And my monthly newsletter is Retirement Planning Insights. You can find links to all three of those in the notes of this episode. And here's my last shameless grovel for your love and affection of 2022. If you do like, value, appreciate this podcast, if you learn from it, I'd be greatly appreciative if you were to take some moments to leave a review, a thumbs up, a like, a star, or whatever means of acknowledgement there is in your podcast listening platform you use to listen to this show. If you do like this podcast, please take some time, do the review. If you don't like this podcast, please take some time, find a friend who does and ask him or her to do a review. No, just kidding. Not really. I'm not kidding. Anyway, so that's it. Thank you. It's been a great first year. The show started mid-January 2022. Here we are 55 episodes later, wrapping up the year. I like to think things are going well and you all are enjoying it and this is received well. And here's to 2023. Let's see what it holds. That's it. Thank you very much. Have a happy, healthy, safe one. And I will see you next year. Take care.
The information discussed in this podcast is only general explanations and education. It is not specific tax, legal, or investment advice. Before considering acting on anything you heard here, first consult with your tax, legal, or investment advisor. Thank you.